You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, Hoopsheads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Friday, January 12th. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. Happy Friday to everyone out there waiting to watch this game against the Bucks tonight. Should be a great one in Milwaukee. I have my friend and roommate, Miles Johnson, joining me to go over that. We're going to go down the Reddit hole and around the NBA in the third segment. Make sure you go to LockedOnWarriors.com, bookmark the page, Locked On Warriors and Locked On NBA Net on Facebook. Check them out. You can get in contact with me via Twitter at Koji Tare, K-O-G-I-T-A-R-E, or via email at AlikoCarter11 at gmail.com. That's A-L-I-K-O-Carter11 at gmail.com. And without further ado, let's start talking about this game. All right, how you doing, Miles?
I'm doing really good. This has been a better week for me than the week before, but I've been good.
That's good. New Year starting off well?
My New Year is starting off really well. I've already recorded another basketball-themed podcast.
Shameless plug alert. Let's go.
It is called The Basketball Court. You can follow us at bballcourtpod on Twitter. Basically, what it is this me and two other people, and we play like kind of like a fake courtroom, mm-hmm. and we litigate different seminal moments in NBA history. It's almost usually always NBA. What would happen if this trade didn't go down? What would happen if this person got drafted earlier or later than they actually did? What would happen if, you know, one shot, you know, like what would happen like if the Ray Allen shot
mm-hmm. against the Spurs yeah, in the Heat, yeah, if that didn't go down.
That doesn't go down. How does that change the landscape of the NBA? So we kind of rewind to these parts and then fast forward all the way to the present.
Interesting.
And then we have a judge that picks the winner at the end. It's really silly. It's fun.
It's like debate class.
Yeah, it's like debate class. If you tune in, like, yes, you're going to learn things about, like, PR and box plus minus and stuff like that. But it's also, like, really silly. We talk about, like, the last episode we did was actually about Steph, if he had been drafted by the Timberwolves instead of the Warriors. And we talk about, like, the Ayesha Curry tweets and, like, so we kind of do a mix of on-the-court stuff and then, like, more basketball pop culture stuff. It's fun. You should check us out.
Plug that again.
It's on Twitter. You can find us at bballcourtpod, so at B-B-A-L-L courtpod. We're on iTunes as the Basketball Court Podcast. Also on Podomatic. If people use Podomatic, it's the same thing, the Basketball Court Podcast. If you have questions about any of this, you can obviously, like, DM the place that I just said, but then also my Twitter is at Black and Outside. If you have questions about the podcast, just hit me up.
And you heard it from the man himself, B-Ball Court Pod. All right, let's talk about this Bucks team. We'll start with the Bucks. What do you like about the Bucks right now, Miles?
Honestly, I think I like the same thing that everyone likes about the Bucks, which is Giannis. Giannis is really fun to watch. But this whole team is. I remember seeing a couple days ago that Jabari Parker is scheduled to come back soon. I'm not sure what the timetable is on his recovery and coming back and being able to play with the team again. But mm-hmm. this is a team that is very long, that is super athletic. But they've been playing, like we were talking about before we started, mm-hmm. they've been playing 500 basketball seemingly all season, right? Like, in October, they went 4-3, November, 7-6, December, 8-6, and currently they're right at 500 in January at 3-3. So for a team that has someone in Giannis who's averaging 28.7 points and 10 rebounds a game, you're averaging double-double, second in scoring, and you've got good pieces around him, and guys like Chris Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon. This is a team that I think, even though they're, what are they, sixth in the East and second in the Central Division, It's interesting. It's they're almost like they're Minnesota East, and like they have all these pieces, and yet it doesn't seem like they're gonna put it together.
Well, yeah, it's definitely not clicking on the defensive end. 25th in defensive efficiency after, you know, when you think when Jason Kidd first took over, that was a good defensive team. So I don't really understand what the drop off in defensive production over the last few seasons is about at all, considering that they have the length to be able to switch everything. They have that proto-like Warriors type of, they could do that if they wanted to because they have such long guys out there. But it just seems like defensive breakdowns really plague them.
They're 30th in rebounding and 16th, so bottom half, in opponent points per game. which doesn't make sense, again, if you have Giannis on your basketball team. And it's, again, it doesn't all, like, you know, boil down to just Giannis. But you've got, and when he's healthy, you've got Giannis, you've got Jabari Parker, you've got Thon Maker. Like, you've got...
Chris Middleton.
You've got guys who are, again, both long on the perimeter and can be rim protected.
Yeah.
So it really is odd to see, you know, such a long athletic team be bad at things like defense and rebounding.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I would have to, like, go back and, like, watch, like, all those Bucks games to see. Because it could be something like, are they so preoccupied on, you know, pushing the ball up floor off of misses that a guy like Giannis is releasing out into the flat instead of rebounding? I mean, because it could be something as simple as that that would, you know, account for. But even that, like, dead last in rebounding is not winning basketball, right? Like,
no,
no matter how good you are offensively, no matter, you know, what talent you got, like, if you're
giving up offensive rebounds, then you're screwing yourself.
If everyone else in the league rebounds the ball better than you, just talking fundamental basketball, you're not going to win very many games.
Yeah, and on the Warriors side, you know, the Warriors were out-rebounded 46-32 against the Clippers in that loss, and their rebounding has been very... a big part of why they've been kind of up and down the last
and even in that being up and they're eighth in they're yes. only seven teams
yeah.
that
they're just
better.
Playing good teams. They're playing good teams who rebound the ball.
Yeah. And they also happen to have Steph Curry and Kevin Durant.
Yeah. So key to the game, rebound the ball.
Key to the game for Milwaukee, is rebounding. Something that's interesting about Milwaukee, and let me pull up the stats so I can tell you the exact number, but the gist is that they win more often when they don't shoot as many threes.
Interesting.
Yeah, so when a greater allotment of their total shots taken are two-point baskets instead of threes, they win way more. Which, again, kind of goes against the grain of the last, you know, 4 or 5 years in terms of how teams are trending towards emphasizing the three ball a lot more. Let me look up the stats specifically so I can tell you. Yeah. So in their wins, the percentage of their points that are 3-point field goals, 21.7%. In losses, that jumps all the way up to 27.4%. And it's one of the biggest margins when you're looking at their win-loss splits that you see. In their wins, the percentage of field goals attempted that are twos, 72.6% compared to in their losses, 67.1%.
Wow.
They're playing, you know, it's... But then there are lots of things about those same sort of shoot that are very closer, or that are much closer, I should say, in like points off of turnovers is just 16.9 to 16.3, so it's about the same. The percentage of points that are free throws is 17.9.
So what you're saying is this is a bad three-point shooting team, and the fewer threes they shoot, the better.
That's what it would seem like, right? But honestly, I was going to say, like... does that make sense to do against a team that is going to be outgunning you, right? But if we've learned anything about the Warriors, is that you can't beat them at their own game.
No,
right?
You can't.
You can't do it.
You have to ground the game to a halt. You got to get them into foul trouble. You got to stop the clock.
Right. The closest that anybody came, like, employing that system, like, we're excluding the 2016 finals because having players of the caliber that LeBron James and Kyrie Irving were basically played out of their minds is going to be an antidote to whatever type of system, right? Like, if you got two guys that are putting up, you know, 40-point triple-doubles, 3 and 4 games a night, like, yeah, you're going to lose to those guys. But the next closest time, though, was actually when Irving and Love got hurt, and you remember that 2015 finals that the Cavs jumped out to that 2-1 game lead on.
Ground the game to a halt.
Timofey Mozgov was a huge part of that series.
Rebounding the ball.
Yeah, not because he was especially skilled offensively. Certainly wasn't shooting any threes. He was mucking it up down the paint, rebounding the ball, controlling possession. So maybe the key for Milwaukee tonight is, like, try to be as anti-Warriors as possible. Not
interesting.
Not just because it's bad for the Warriors, but because it seems to be better for Milwaukee.
Well, here's a quick update. Stephen Curry is not going to play in this game.
Oh, really?
And when Stephen Curry doesn't play, the Warriors play at a slower pace. They're averaging something like 128 points when Curry plays and 105 when he doesn't. So it's going to be a different game.
They're plus minus, and this is something that I would have to bring up so I can give you the numbers exactly, but when Steph is off the floor for the Warriors, I shouldn't say off the floor, when Steph does not play for the Warriors in that game, they fare much worse in terms of box minus than when Kevin Durant
Yep. Doesn't play. Yep. Like I went into that in my statistical deep dive last week.
So you know better than I do. Even. Yeah. I just saw somebody with a tweet though, that was like, it's like the difference of like 18.1 to like 8.1. It's,
yep.
It's a huge jump.
Yeah, the net rating is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's a huge jump. And so that's an interesting. Now, I don't know if you had this planned later in the show or mm-hmm. later in like another episode, but have we talked about the injury system?
So I went into detail on injuries, but no, we didn't get conspiracy specific with it. So if you want to get conspiracy specific with it, why don't we wait until we go around the NBA?
Sure. Yeah.
And I do want to bring it back to.
But that is interesting. That Steph is out for tonight. That I think that changes.
It changes the game.
Yeah, and if nothing else for Milwaukee defensively, it totally changes how you're going to have to D up the Warriors.
Right. Right. Sean Livingston is available to play, but he's got a left knee contusion, so he's going to be iffy. Andre Iguodala has left knee soreness. He's going to be in the game, but Omri Caspi is questionable. So the Warriors still a little bit banged up, and obviously Kevin Durant is going to be on his little 32-minute limit, I think. So there, we need a big game from Draymond. Draymond has to play better. I said that in the last podcast. You know, a few games ago, he had that 23-10-5 gym. Before that, he had a triple-double. But this last game, he just threw up a clunker, just a real stinker. And he's going to have to patrol the back line with aplomb. He's going to have to direct the offense and push the ball and keep the Bucks on their heels.
What do you think the reason is, or I don't know if you have any speculation as to why he's kind of been slumping lately?
Well, I wouldn't really say slumping as much as inconsistent. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the lineups keep changing. Mm-hmm. That Steph was injured, then KD was injured, then Steph is injured again. Klay Thompson wasn't in that game. And Draymond has a tendency to, when things aren't going well for him in some way, to kind of keep pushing it. So he took 6 threes. He was 0 of 6 from 3 in that last game, when really what we needed were his assists, his vision, his rim runs, and his ability to direct the offense into good shots.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I wouldn't say slumping. I would say inconsistent. I definitely don't think that his play this year is necessarily up to the level that it was last year.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, since that was an extra long segment, I've decided we're going to combine the second and the third segment. We're going to do Around the NBA through the lens of Reddit, another extra long segment. But first, I want to talk to you about sponsoring the Locked On Warriors podcast. If your company is targeting men between the ages of 18 and 44, look no further than Locked On Warriors. Our podcast is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if that's your target demographic, get at me. Our rates are reasonable. You can reach me at alicocarter11@gmail.com, and I'll give you all the details. It's a winner's move, y'all. All right, I'm back with Miles Johnson, and we're going to jump right into Reddit. I want to start by saying Zach LaVine is going to be back in the starting lineup.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fun.
In the starting lineup, yeah, for the Bulls against the Pistons. Tomorrow night, that's from Redditor IMRBJ on the NBA Reddit subreddit. And that, that's worth watching a Bulls game, I think.
The Bulls have been fun to watch. Like, I'm not quite sure what they've been doing recently, but when they started on that win streak that they went on at the tail end of last season, they've been playing good ball. Lauri Markkanen has really kind of come into his own as a rookie.
Yeah, he has. He's playing defense too, which was not something that, you know, people, he was going to have to grow into that role.
Yeah, and for rookies, it's not something that you necessarily expect like that much out of them anyway, which is why I think guys like Jason Tatum are so extraordinary.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, but the Bulls are fun. Between Markkanen and Valentine and the play that they've gotten out of Chris Dunn, who's mm-hmm. been great after the kind of weird time that he had in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And LaVine's got, that guy's got bounce. He can jump. So
he
does. That's going to be a fun.
Yeah, hopefully that ACL injury didn't take too much out of him, but you know, he had plenty of time to recover. All right, so I know you're a Wiz fan.
Unfortunately, but don't hold it against me.
No, I never do. It's you guys start with W, we start with W. We have more in common than really, you know, than.
Well, you say that, but
yeah,
we are 23 and 18. And something that I just learned today, apparently through the Orlando Sentinel that Marcin Gortat wants to retire after the 2018-2019 season, and he wants to end his career in Orlando, where he has roots, if you are familiar with his kind of story in the NBA, which is, you know, it is, I guess, good for the Wizards in that there is an opening for some opportunity in terms of, like, roster change. Like, one of the worst things to be in the NBA is, like, you either want to be really, really great, you want to be elite, or you want to be a bottom feeder so that you can, you know, have something to try to rebuild. And whether that is, like, superstar talent at the top or draft picks at the bottom, the worst thing to be is, like, middling, which is what the Wizards have been for the last
10 years.
No, look, go all the way back.
All the way back. Arenas. Years. Yeah.
Those teams were a lock for anywhere between the third and the sixth seed in the playoffs, but they weren't ever going to make the conference finals. And you kind of have the same thing now with Wall and Beal. So it's good in that there's maybe some room for Ernie Grunfeld to hopefully not wallow in. But it's really, what a disaster season for the Wizards. I mean, everything from injuries, which have, you know, hampered both Beal and Wall. If you're asking Wizards fans like me, I say Beal has underperformed as he did, not so much last year, but especially this year, he has underperformed. And now you've got Gortat, your best center, the best screener, if we're talking about screens for assists, in the NBA. There's no one who has more screen assists than Marcin Gortat, someone who totally makes the John Wall pick and roll game work. If you watch the Wizards, you'll look and say, well, man, why does Gortat look so bad in games that Wall isn't there? It's because, like, those two are two peas in a pod. And the same thing, when Gortat's not on the floor, yes, Wall can get his shot, but that pick and roll that has been so devastating, that doesn't happen anymore. And part of that is Gortat's size. So,
He knocks down three free throws.
And he knocks down free throws, something that Bradley Beal has struggled with the game on the line on more than one occasion this season. I think if you're asking me, I would love to see them make a play for Julius Randle at the trade deadline.
That would be fun.
I thought somebody, he could come off the bench. Now it might look like he could get something in L.A. that he, you know, wasn't able to get, which is lots of minutes and maybe a more prominent role on the team. But that's kind of the big thing that I've been thinking about lately for the Wizards.
Sure.
That and just, hopefully they'll figure it out and put it together.
So that Marcin Gortat news comes from Cyber Sam, Redditor Cyber Sam. There's something else that I saw recently about Kobe Bryant. He's going to have a new show on ESPN called Detail. This comes from Redditor LeBron is overrated. and he's going to analyze film about how to make players better.
And is he analyzing his own film? because I watched that.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see him talking to, like, for example, Andrew Wiggins is like, you know, young fella, I know you're trying to emulate me and everything, so let's put these film...
Bring up a chair for this January 2002 game between me and the Minnesota
screen to screen, yeah, exactly. So I dropped 48 in that game, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so this news comes from ESPN by way of ESPN Media Zone. They announced that they're going to have a new show with Bryant, where the viewers will experience unparalleled game observations from Bryant as if he were one of the players featured in an ESPN game played the day before, studying game film and stuff like that. It's an interesting premise for a show. It sounds like it could potentially be boring, except that Kobe is just so not boring.
Yeah, yeah. I think what they're doing is very nicely asking Kobe Bryant, would you please go on television for us and just be yourself? Yeah. And I think that's good. I'd watch it. I'm going to tune in.
And they're going to pay him, too. I mean, Kobe Bryant has made a career out of getting paid, a late career of just getting paid for nothing. Right? I mean, $48 million for 2 years, most of which he was on the shelf. And now this, you know, he's going to be one of ESPN's highest paid personalities.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he doesn't do anything
for
free.
Why else would you do? I mean, if you're Kobe and you are already one of the most celebrated basketball players of the last generation, why would you go back to work for anything less than lots and lots of buckets of money?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's so fun. I'd watch that.
I'd watch it too. So it'll have a 15-episode run. It's going to air during the back half of the 2017-2018 season, concluding with the finals. It's aimed at young athletes, current NBA players, and coaches looking for deeper analysis of an athlete's in-game execution, and obviously just people who watch ESPN.
I was going to say, that market description seems like not very many people.
Yeah,
but hopefully
it will
extend to the
but
rest
Kobe's,
of us.
But Kobe's got star power, and this show obviously is going to be huge in LA.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But anything the Lakers do is huge in LA. If you look at what's Lonzo in All-Star voting? He's like fifth or sixth.
Kuzma has more than Lonzo by like 50,000. Kyle Kuzma.
Well, yeah. Kyle Kuzma's been balling.
He's been playing better than Lonzo, but like still, I mean,
I think Kuzma's above Towns too.
Yeah,
Karl-Anthony Towns is.
Yeah. Anyway. But, you know, whatever. Anyway, so Bryant's Granity Studios is working with ESPN. It's his third project between ESPN and Bryant's Granity Studios. He partnered with the network for a limited run of Canvas City. And this season, he's provided short packages on the network called Muse Cage Basketball Network. So, it's, you know, Bryant's keeping busy.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Anyway, let's move on. What else we got? Did you see anything interesting on the Redditors, the Reddit world that you want to talk about?
So I just saw that, and again, this is coming from someone who is very much attracted to conspiracy theories, but that there is no All-Star draft. If anybody is unfamiliar, people have been really speculating as to whether this draft for the All-Star game, they're doing it differently now, this time where you're going to have two captains, and mm-hmm. they draft team, kind of like you want on the playground, or like a pickup ball game.
Yeah.
But everyone has been kind of hand-wringing over, you know, what an awkward position this puts the players in, because you don't want to be an All-Star and pick last.
Yeah.
Of course, like, that's the whole point of televising it, right? Mm-hmm. It's because, like, this is another part of the entertainment, and you have guys
who... The guy who gets picked last is going to have a chip on his shoulder. He's going to go out and win the All-Star Game MVP, right?
You would think that would be the most of it. Some people have said, no, this puts them in, or even, and by some people I mean Commissioner Adam Silver, has said this has put them in an awkward position, that, you know, you don't want to, like, televise something that, you know, potentially sensitive and awkward. Other people, though, like LeBron James, like John Wall, like players who are probably going to be voted to the All-Star team, have said, this is a job, it's not that serious. You get picked or you get picked and you go out and play.
Mm-hmm.
I think for viewers, though, like, of course you want to see that, right? Like,
yeah,
of course,
absolutely.
Of course
that,
you want
that's
to see...
That's TNT drama.
Of course you want to see LeBron having to decide between picking Kevin Love, who's on his team,
mm-hmm.
or maybe whether he decides that, hey, like, actually Giannis inexplicably is, like, left at this round.
You know, the funny thing, though, is, like, if Steph Curry or Kevin Durant gets the number one spot, all the Warriors are getting picked first. You
yeah.
know that.
Yeah.
Whereas with LeBron, you don't know that.
No, and that's part of what's fun. That's part of the intrigue. Like, you could very easily see LeBron being like, oh, yeah, we're Kevin Love. He's my guy. You could also see him being like,
yeah.
let me maybe not do that. Yeah.
So this comes from Redditor Deadscene. He says, or she, or they, who knows, says specifically, since the picks are not being televised, I think the NBA itself will just come up with some matchups that would generate the most attention, like LeBron and Kyrie on opposite teams, or KD and Westbrook on opposite teams. Maybe both. Of course, they will say the captains picked those players, but we won't have any behind-the-scenes info. And this isn't something like rigging the lottery, since there's nothing on the line. Players probably don't even care about it. They're all-stars either way. The, quote, draft is actually just the NBA's solution to have more control over the game. They couldn't say, yeah, we pick the teams now, and this is the alternative.
Oh, yeah. This, whew, my third eye is so open. That is definitely what's happening.
Mm.
You know, I told you, I only need a little bit of nudging to go full in on conspiracy theories. It makes total sense, right? Like,
yeah.
Especially with how lopsided, like, the East and the West have become, that's the kind of been one of the bigger storylines off the floor.
True.
This does, like, allow the NBA to kind of craft a lot of the same narratives and storylines that you get organically from having the draft be televised without ever having to do that. And, like this Redditor says, by giving them the cover to unilaterally do that without any type of question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I would not be shocked at all if there actually is no draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
And they're right. The players don't care because it's the All-Star game.
Yeah. So,
do we want to talk about the Drake jerseys?
I do want to talk about the Drake
okay,
jerseys.
Great.
I'm about to talk about the Drake jerseys. Great. Obviously, the Toronto Raptors unveiled their new OVO edition jerseys and court. There's photos on Reddit. Redditor Ridgie Rock gives us some nice, nice photos of the court, what it's going to look like with the OVO.
And got the gold tint to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the V in the middle, kind of like the What is it? Oh my God, that looks amazing. Oh, that's beautiful. So it's got the Toronto Raptors ripped basketball in the middle, but instead of just the basketball, it's got Toronto and Raptors around it in a black circle. The keys are all black. There's a cascading V going down, or like kind of an A going down across the court with different colors for different areas of the hardwood. And then the baseline and sideline are all black with goldish writing that says "Welcome Toronto." It looks really, really good, y'all.
Yeah,
it looks
really good. The gold accent, it's nice.
These jerseys are interesting.
Yeah, I'm less of a fan of the jerseys as I am the floor. Although the jerseys I don't think are bad. I think going with North instead of Toronto or Raptors or something is an interesting choice.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, it's like the town jersey or something like that. It's like, we the North has been their mantra for a long time. And so it was only a matter of time before it ended up on a Nike jersey.
Right. If people remember, they first did this Drake collaboration, I think back in 2014, but it was just with fan shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the old school Raptors logo with the, if you remember, the Velociraptor and the short shorts. But everything had the gold accents. What I want to stress here is the black on gold that they, is it looks really clean. It looks really nice. Like, if you're a fan too, if you want your one thing I will say, as a Wizards fan, it's hard to wear gear to anywhere that's not a Wizards game. Because it's the red, white, and blue, nothing against things that are red, white, and blue, of course, but the red, white, and blue makes it kind of difficult to, you know, match the
black and gold. I actually miss those kind of goldish duds that you guys had in the mid-2000s. I liked
those. The Zephyrs, yeah.
The Zephyrs, yeah, I liked those.
So anytime, I don't know how often it's happened, but anytime you got the black and gold, especially if the gold is an accent like it is here, it looks really nice. You can go out in the town with one of these Raptors jerseys on, nobody would question you.
And that's what Drake was going for, obviously. All right, Jason Concepcion has a new piece on Markelle Fultz, the mystery of Markelle Fultz, that I am in the process of reading right now, but it brings me back to the Sixers and this guy, Markelle Fultz, because I really wanted to see him play this year. I have no idea what's wrong with him. Do you know what's wrong with Markelle Fultz?
I don't know that anybody, I don't even know if the Sixers medical staff knows what's wrong with Markelle Fultz, or if they do, they certainly have not been forthcoming with it at all. I know that they said they've made progress, but I'm not sure even what that means. Like, at the beginning of the season, it was, there's not an injury, his form is just off. Then it was, just kidding, no, there is an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was, no, there's not an injury. Right. We did that back and forth for a while, and there was a long period of time where it was like, yes, he's injured, we're rehabbing him. Now as he comes back, I think my biggest question is, like, how do we, like, begin to, like, rebuild trust in the Sixers medical staff?
Yeah.
That's something that, like, Zach Lowe has brought up on one of his podcasts before, is, like, you never know when they send out the releases, too, with the injury reports that they do regularly. You never know what's going to be in there. You never know if it's going to be, hey, this person is definitely injured, and you can say, okay, that means that they have gone through the proper procedures and protocols and they're injured. Or whether the Sixers are just making it up. And again, we didn't talk about injury conspiracies before the Warriors, but I don't think it should be shocking to any NBA fans that coaches and front offices definitely are figuring out ways in which to manipulate the rules around injuries in order to best suit the... And I'm not trying to say that's shady or anything. That's just kind of a reality of the league and where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. So this comes from Redditor SpartanPride52. He posted the piece from The Ringer. And this is from Jason Concepcion. Markelle Fultz is a mystery, which is a rare and strange thing these days. A mystery is essentially a lack of information, but modern life is defined by incessant information overload, which is why, Miles, conspiracy theories are so common. They posit a world in which the vast and readily available information swirling all around us is being constantly subverted by shadowy forces to obfuscate the truth. In the second decade of the 21st century, mysteries, actual what-the-fuck-happened mysteries, are mostly relegated to inexplicable plane crashes and true crime podcasts. Fultz's shoulder injury, which may or may not be real, note in this context, real means stemming from physical causes, not similarly serious, but more complicated issues resulting from internal conflict, stress, anxiety, or the like, has limited him to only 4 games this season. It is something special, an actual mystery. Well written, Concepcion.
Yeah, he's usually very much on point. And he is here, too. I mean, I think that is something that is maybe the most surprising thing about all of this. Is in 2018, when things are... It seems like Twitter is, like, everywhere, and that information is always coming out. It's impossible to hide things. The Sixers have done a really good job keeping everybody in the dark about Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
He was the number one pick in the draft. Like, this is unprecedented that we would have, like, this little information about someone so integral to a franchise trying to, like, not just restart, but, like, contend. Like, and if we've seen anything from the Sixers this year, they're trying to contend, and I think Fultz is still a piece of that.
And they're still doing the same thing with Joel Embiid as well. Embiid, yeah. What they did was, like, we didn't know he wasn't practicing at all until halfway through the season.
Right.
So that was an interesting situation to have to deal with. Anyway, we're going to move on because I want to talk about the Cavaliers.
Okay.
Because the Cavaliers suck right now.
They are perhaps in crisis mode, yeah.
They are perhaps in crisis mode, and the Warriors will be in Cleveland on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, to make sure that that crisis continues. And, like, I'm really excited about that. I don't know if you saw this game against the Drakes last night, but Isaiah Thomas looked absolutely horrible. LeBron yelled at his teammates, but he didn't look good either. Jakob Poeltl became, like, a fucking wrecking ball. Like, it was absolutely insane. So, oh, that's two F-bombs in this podcast. Sorry, guys.
I didn't see the game. I did see afterwards people claim that those close to the Cavaliers and inside the locker room were frustrated with LeBron slowing down of the pace.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is very interesting, because if you read the profile that Jackie McMullen did on Kyrie and his decision to ask for a trade that was published in ESPN either last week or week before, there's this great anecdote in there that Kyrie and Ty Lue kind of get into it because Ty wants him to push the ball and run the offense faster. And the soundbite everybody walked away with is Kyrie saying, you know, that's not my job, that's 23's role.
Mm.
And so it's interesting now that now not only do the Cavs, like, want to slow down, and it's interesting that the removal of Kyrie would spur that kind of change in offensive strategy. And I think it's also interesting that people are upset with him for doing so. Like, this is a team that seems like wants to keep playing fast. I'd be curious to why LeBron did slow it down, if that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it just makes him feel like he's more in control. I don't know. Isaiah Thomas looked a step slow out there. He looked odd. He looked honestly small and slow. And his speed is one of his most important things. Getting his shot off quickly is what makes his size manageable. But he was, I believe, 2 of 15 from the field. He started 0 of 10. He was bad.
Has he played 10 games yet?
This is fourth.
Fourth game? Fourth game. Yeah, I mean, so... I would caution, as we do every year, right? This happens every year. We get to late December, mid-January, sometimes even February, and there's a period at which we hit the panic button on the Cavs. And yes, I would, you know, temper that with they have LeBron James, who is the best playoff player that we've seen in the last, like, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd also like to temper that with there's a lot of season left. They still haven't gotten what I think they're going to get out of Isaiah Thomas. If for nothing else, they haven't gotten, like, practice time, like, with him as an integral part of that first unit. I see why people are concerned about the Cavs, and I even think that if there is something going on in the locker room where people are upset with LeBron, that's one thing. But just in terms of them, like, not tearing up the regular season, or even underperforming, like, because it goes in the regular season, like... I really think we have to start treating LeBron teams now that this is his 15th season. We gotta start treating them like Spurs in the East, right? Like, he is biding his time.
Yeah, but the Spurs are never this bad defensively. Like, what do you make of how bad the Cavaliers are on defense? They allowed 133 points to the Rockets and to the Raptors, and they play again tonight. They're on the second night of a back to back against Indiana Pacers, who are very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, they have taken a step back offensively.
The Cavaliers?
Compared to last season. In addition to their defense,
they've
also gotten
slightly... They have taken a step back.
They have not gotten as bad as they have gotten defensively. But I think if you are able to, score more, and I also, and feel free for any of your listeners to correct me if I'm wrong, their pace, they've played a little bit slower than they were for the totality of last season.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing slower, when you're not scoring as many points, like, that in turn is going to make it harder to play defense.
They're also starting Kevin Love at center.
I was going to say, like, part of it, too, is the and we talked about this, I think, the last time I was on the podcast. Like, we talked about the debacle that they had at point guard with the Kyrie vacuum and with Isaiah Thomas not being back. They had to kind of switch up their lineups, and part of that meant bumping Tristan Thompson back to the bench. Well, what that does is it removes you of your best rim protector. Mm-hmm. It also requires not only for Kevin Love to step up, but for him to step up and be good.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that I think is really, you know, conversely, really impressive about a guy like Durant is that, you know, they lost their rim protector, seemingly, and I lost in scare quotes because this is the this is audio and you can't see me. They lost their rim protector, Andrew Bogut, and Durant was like, nah, I got you, and is now leading the league in blocks. Like, unless you're going to have that same type of production from someone else, from a guy like Kevin Love, you are going to get worse, right?
Right, and then you got IT.
So I say all that to say, like, we could very well get to a point where this team by March looks a lot more like the Cavs team. And it's not going to be the exact same, right? Because Kyrie and IT are different players. And just in terms of style, not even talking about talent, they play different styles. But we might get to a point where that offense is at least, like, more comparable. And depending on what they do at the trade deadline, because I've also seen rumors that they're looking to move Tristan Thompson entirely. If they make that move for someone like DeAndre Jordan, for example, the defense automatically changes, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about one of the best rim protectors in the league. Like, you put him, really, their offense and defense changes, because think about, too, the LeBron-DeAndre Jordan pick and roll. Think about how impossible that would be to stop.
Yeah.
Just give him some time, I think, is really the key.
I want to thank Redditors Jake Vertanen, Psycheid, JB Eastman, Demon RDT6, Gnome Stomsky. They all posted about this horrible, horrible Cavs game, or aka great, great Raptors game that we saw. The Warriors are going to play the Raptors on the road shortly. The Raptors are very formidable at home.
If the Cavaliers don't, like, and again, this is, take everything that I just said and throw it out the window. Now we're going to do entirely too early predictions. But if the Cavs don't make it out of the East, do you feel more comfortable in betting your money on Toronto or Boston?
That's an excellent question.
Because Toronto
depends on who has home court.
Let's say it ends like it ends now with Boston having home court. Then Boston wins.
Yeah. I think that Toronto's home woes in the playoffs are behind them. And if they can get a better record, they can squeak by on home wins. But anyway, one last thing I want to address on this super long pod. Your Redditor Your Face LOL, who I've referenced in the past, posted a story that Draymond says the Warriors should get 4 All-Stars again. Would be the first time that a team has gotten 4 All-Stars in back-to-back seasons. Unprecedented. The Warriors are used to doing unprecedented things. But I wanted to first, Miles, get your thoughts on whether or not the Warriors deserve 4 All-Stars, and then second, on the gravity of what that would mean for the league and this team.
Well, I mean, I think I'll answer your questions in reverse. I don't think, like, them being selected back-to-back, having 4 starters in the All-Star game.
Not 4 starters, just 4 All-Stars.
Oh, so he's not even talking about start. Oh,
no.
Yeah, okay. That was going to be
But this would be the first time in the NBA history that a team had 4 All-Stars in back-to-back seasons. If you recall, there were teams with 4 All-Stars, those Pistons from 2004 or 2005.
It was and Chauncey and Prince and Wild.
The Lakers from the late 90s, early 2000s with Nick Van Exel and a few other guys along with Kobe and Shaq.
Okay.
But nobody has done it for...
So that the 08-09 Boston team, they didn't do it either?
I don't think that Rondo. Yeah, they did it, but they didn't do it in back-to-back seasons.
Yeah, I mean, so what I was gonna say is, yes, this is very impressive. I think, especially if no one's ever done it before. But I think, like, if we're talking about what that means, like, the impact of the Warriors creating a super team, like, that has already happened. Like, in terms of changing the course,
they changed the league.
Yeah, they've already done that. I think if you're asking, like, to assess the validity of Draymond's claim, I think the easiest way, for me anyway, to do it is, if you assume he's wrong, who are you leaving off that list?
Exactly.
Right? It's not Kevin Durant.
Nope. Right? It's not Stephen Curry.
And it's not Steph Curry.
So it would be Draymond, because it's not Klay.
So my thing, which is why I erroneously said starters first, is I was like, okay, so it's probably Klay, because he's not going to get voted in as a starter. But Klay is a lock in terms of the coaches.
Yeah.
So it's not Steph, it's not KD, and really, I think, had Steph not come back and then just decided to set the world then on he fire, would, then exactly. maybe you could have a case there. But Steph came back and decided to set the world on
fire. So I have a question. Like, if you are voted in as a starter, but then you have to get picked by the captain, how does that work?
Oh, God, I don't know. And also, what's interesting, too, is I don't know why I'm just now thinking about this.
But like, do the starters get picked first?
Why are we still voting by East and West, then? Why aren't we just voting and then the top... How 20 people or whomever are the ones.
Adam Silver got some explaining to do.
Yeah, I'm confused about how this works. So the whole thing might just be a flawed system, but upon the rules that we have come to understand, yeah, I think Draymond's exactly right. Who are you leaving off on that list?
Yeah.
It's not Durant, because he had been the lifeblood of the team before Steph came back. Steph came back and then was like, oh, right.
Oh, look, I'm magic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, right. I don't make any sense, right? So that it's not him. I think if you're really going to argue about somebody, it's Draymond.
And his numbers are down across the board.
And then show me who you're putting in over Draymond that a group of coaches in the Western Conference are going to be like, yeah, that person deserves to be in.
Above Draymond. I don't see it. They're going to have four All-Stars again.
Yeah, I don't see it.
It just is what it is.
Sorry. I mean, they're really good.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not sorry. This is my team. I love it. I fucking love it. That's three F-bombs. Excuse me. It's Friday. that's the F-bomb.
That's four F-bombs.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, that's my pod. That's the week. Thanks for joining us, and enjoy Bucks versus Warriors. Stay thoughtful, hoops heads.